Welcome to Film Fight Club. I'm Glenn Falconstein from Falcon Screen, and we are joined by freelance writer and critic Bharat Nehru.
Hello, hello.
And Sydney filmmaker Chris Evans.
Hello.
Now, what is that strange sound? We are shuffling our programs because it is the opening night of the Sydney Film Festival.
And we're still flicking through this thing, trying to figure out a schedule that works, thanks to all these damn clashes.
Clashes, because it is our annual clashes episode. We haven't sorted out our schedules yet, so we are going through day by day and figuring out what we should see, what each other should see, and what you should see. And we will fight about it and figure out what is the best thing. And because there are so many films, there are bound to be clashes, so you have to kill some darlings.
That's right. And speaking of how many films there are, it's necessitated something unprecedented in Film Fight Club history.
Yes, we have. Usually we come to you half an hour a week, sometimes more, with our podcast, which you can download with podcasts everywhere. Every episode is now up on iTunes and Podcaster and all that. But we now have not one hour, but we are coming to you throughout the Sydney Film Festival for 2 hours every week.
Yes, we'll have 30 minutes on the air on Wednesday nights, as always, plus the extra podcast material for another half an hour. Plus, we'll be going now for the entirety of Sydney Film Festival with 1 hour-long episodes from 12 till 1 p.m. on Sunday.
Yeah, so tune in that time, or you can get us on the podcast and find out after a few days what you should be seeing, what we have seen, and what are the best things that are screening in and around Sydney.
We'll endeavour to give you the most complete Sydney Film Festival coverage on the radio.
It is going to be phenomenal. And speaking of Sydney Film Festival coverage on the radio, for all those 2SER Sydney Film Festival fans listening out there, there are many new additions, but there is one film that is a staple, and that is Hearts Beat Loud, the new Nick Offerman and Toni Collette film, which is screening on the final night. And if you would like to see that, usually tickets are, $30, but we can get them to you for $19.90. So if you go on the Sydney Film Festival app and apply coupon 2SER18, that's 2SER18, to the Hearts Beat Loud closing night session.
Or the Sydney Film Festival website if you don't have the app.
You can get discounted tickets to the new Offerman film and with, what was his name? And Ron Swanson.
Ron
Swanson.
From Parks and Recreation.
Yeah, Nick Offerman and Toni Collette. They're the two main people.
And indie, heartwarming father-daughter type stuff.
That it's a closing night film. Your night out with it. You know?
Yeah, heartwarming stuff, but we will be rejecting in favor of brutality, as we'll get to later in the program.
First, we want to touch base on another film, the biggest film in cinemas right now, which is Solo. Not the drink, we're not advertising Solo. It is the new film with, you know, about Han Solo.
It is the thirst crusher. And it's crushed the thirst for future Star Wars spin-offs.
Oh my God, it is not done well. I'm surprised. I didn't hate it. I enjoyed a lot of it. I know there's differing opinions on this film on the panel, so we will be...
Sometimes I just don't know who you are, Glenn.
Oh dear, I'm looking forward to getting into that fight. And further in our podcast segment, because we will be doing an extended bit on Solo, but also on Solo spoilers. Now, this is basically a spoiler-proof film with one exception, and we will be talking about that big spoiler, which is my favorite part of the film. But I was expecting Bharat to say something there. I just saw this daggers like staring across the studio at me.
It's not even that good a spoiler, but it's okay. You liked it. I love you, Glenn.
I love you too, Bharat. Wait, Film Fight Club. Film Fight Club.
So get it right, guys.
So we are doing our clashes episode, but we will start off with one film that has just screened, and that is Support the Girls. It is a new film with Regina Hall of Scary Movie fame and Hayley Lou Richardson, a very diverse actress who was recently in The Edge of 17 and in Split. She was one of the kidnappees.
Regina Hall of Scary Movie fame. I would never. What?
Okay, those were I didn't like them. They were popular movies, let's be fair.
Okay. It's directed by one of the founding fathers of Mumblecore, for anyone who remembers that, Andrew Bujalski, who directed Mutual Appreciation. Yeah, it's a very kind of warm film covering a manager about to encounter a lot of trouble over a couple of days at the sports bar that she manages and her relationship with her employees.
Yes, it's called the sports bar is called Double Whammers. It is self-described as a sports bar with curves, and there is a number of new recruits, as an addition to a number of stalwarts, and it is their day in their crazy life. Now, I quite enjoyed this. I've got to say, it started off really well with a semi-documentary style. It clearly was a fictional narrative film, and I liked that semi-detached fly-in-the-wall scale. It kind of changed later in the film where you followed individuals round and you had less of a group dynamic, and I didn't enjoy those parts as much, but for the beginning and end, I thought this was a thoroughly good watch.
Yeah, I was surprised by how actually funny it was. You know, it's genuinely funny film, and it's really good. Look, Sydney Film Fest was known for its long films and its heavy films and its political narratives.
This is very light.
But you don't get to find actually funny, you know, genuinely funny light movies often in the schedule. So it's actually a really good film to begin your experience with.
This is a film that I think could easily have a mainstream audience.
Oh, totally, yeah.
That, you know, knowing the way things are these days, it'll struggle to find that. But I think this is a film that really could have mass appeal. It's very endearing, I think, in the way that it depicts a very big-hearted, selfless, really, individual looking after her, you know, extended family, essentially. You know, it's really about the sisterhood of these employees and how they look out for each other as they defend against, you know, a lot of misogyny and just general jerkiness that comes with being in this environment.
But also I love how this didn't sort of run on the nose, the misogyny and the actual sort of heavy-handedness is never sort of jutting out in your face.
I think for the most part that's correct until a point near the end of the movie.
Yes, when I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, it crosses a line and becomes a little bit too obvious.
Yeah, this is a film which deals with a lot of brilliant characters but also a lot of quite cynical characters, and in parts is the sparing, but that's not the spirit of the film, and it's very much encapsulated by the ending. It is ultimately uplifting.
Very life-affirming, I think.
It is. However, it will be in cinemas, at least in America, later in the year, we hope in Australia. But if you don't have the opportunity to see it later in cinemas year, you can see this again at the festival.
Yes, it's showing sometime.
We will come back to it as we go through our schedules, because we do have to plan the rest of our schedules. Now, right after this episode, I will be running to catch the first half of Origin, because it is also Origin night.
Hold on. You can, if you want to see Support the Girls, you can catch it Saturday night at 6:30 p.m. at the Randwick Ritz Cinema.
This Saturday. Oh, I'm seeing the new Man Who Killed Don Quixote.
As am I, yeah.
Which we need to talk about
as
the additions.
Am I, actually.
Okay, so there's
we're
no clash
just getting
there.
Together.
We yeah,
just,
well, we've reached our first clash. You can see Support the Girls or The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, the closing night film at the Cannes Film Festival, many years in the making. If you haven't seen it, I suggest you check out the making of documentary for the first attempt to make this film, which was aborted. Which the film is called The Lost in La Mancha, and it was a production where pretty much anything that could go wrong did. And over the years, the curse of this film followed Terry Gilliam through 7 follow-up attempts to bring this film to fruition until here it is, still stuck in legal turmoil. It has no Australian distributor because its release is being challenged by a rogue producer. Try and help Terry Gilliam escape this curse by proving that his film can be seen at this first public screening.
And not have it crushed by a giant foot. But it is incredible. It is the first public screening, and it is one of the many first editions.
I know, actually, and it's one of the late editions from Cannes that the Sydney Film Festival program picked up. This was one of the films that I definitely... We were talking, Chris and I were talking about this, and Chris was like, this is the one people did not get picked up. Like,
yeah,
he was like, you're not even certain.
It was my hope. It was the one I was holding out for.
I thought it might happen initially but as like closing night film or something, and then when it didn't turn up, I thought, no, they're not going to touch this legal hellhole. But no, here it is.
I'm very glad.
Yeah, all the go Sydney Film Fest.
And all the Big Adam Driver films that are playing at the festival. And there are a number of other editions too. Woman at War.
Woman at War and Girl are two that I think all of us are going to miss, right?
Yes, I was going to see it, but now the other clashing with Three Faces that I was like, Panahi or Funny? And I'm like, Panahi.
To be clear, I think we'd all like to see those films. It's just gotten to a point where it's incredibly hard. Those two films I'd actually be really keen for, but the late editions have messed up our perfectly curated and artfully pruned over many days and hours Sydney Film Fest lined up. Just last week they suddenly drop 8 must-see films into the selection.
I think just out of principle, because I'm seeing all the Iranian...
Please keep doing it, SFF, but...
I think out of principle, I'm seeing all the Iranian films at the festival on screen, so I'm just doing that. So I'm seeing Three Faces, I'm seeing Pig, I'm seeing No Date, No Signature, so I think it's only fair that I was not going to discount Panahi in there.
Well, I will be seeing Pig and Three Faces, I think, the following week, but for the moment we are talking about tonight, as I said, I will be seeing the first half of Origin, because that is important, but later I will be seeing Ghost Stories, the new Martin Freeman film. There is each year an excellent selection of horror at the festival. This seems to be no exception. And this is in a 3 films and anthology series, and I do like anthology horror, so I'm quite entertained by this, and I look forward to catching it.
There's actually a lot of interesting stuff on the first night. Something that's just already screened, and sadly won't be screening again, but I'd just like to talk about, because I was so surprised and impressed by it, is My 20th Century. It's the debut feature from Inyadi... Oh, God.
Nkedi.
Enchetti, yes. Yep. Who directed last year's Sydney Film Fest prize winner On Body and Soul, which is now showing at Dendy Newtown. It was made in the 80s, and I'd never heard of this film, and I was completely surprised by it. It feels like a lost French New Wave film in some ways. It feels very postmodernist with a lot of tangents. It's a very storybook-style, magical realist fable that defies easy categorization, but has a very warm kind of, it's covering some dark material, but has a sense of youthful innocence. It's a film that features scenes like a monkey explaining to the two principal characters at the zoo the story of how it came to be captured, or stars in the night sky telepathically communicating with a dog to show it the world and help it escape. It's full of all sorts of craziness. I really recommend people seek this film out after the festival, because it's something I'd never heard of that the festival was able to bring to my attention. Well, it's great.
One other thing that is screening, I'm actually not seeing it tonight, I'm seeing it on Friday, is Disobedience, the new film with our two favourite Rachels, Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. And it is a Jewish Orthodox LGBT drama taking place in a suburb in North London within the Haredi community, and I'm quite curious about this one.
Directed by Sebastian Lelio, who won the Oscar for Fantastic Woman, though not my favourite film, but it's all right. But I'm looking forward to him redeeming himself with Disobedience with our two favourite Rachels, and I think I'm a huge fan of Rachel McAdams. So
we all are.
I love Rachel McAdams too.
I think it's about time she got her due in dramatic roles.
Yes, so I'm happy that she's gotten this role. But I've heard better things about it than A Fantastic Woman, which I pretty much hated. But this is coming out in general release on next Thursday.
Oh, the 14th. The festival.
The festival, I'm pretty sure. Okay. Another film they're showing here, Hardware. Upgrade.
Or Upgrade Your Hardware.
Which is screening tomorrow night, the new Lee Winnell film starring Logan Marsh Green. Now, I caught the invitation a couple of years ago with him. It was quite a good one, and this seems interesting. He plays a person who was paralyzed in a home invasion. His wife was killed, and due to some revolutionary program, he is able to not just walk again, but to be incredibly strong and seek vengeance against those who have done him wrong.
Mm. I would just advise people that a lot of movies that are playing at the festival, see them at the festival if you'd like to. You'll probably get a better atmosphere and a bigger crowd, but do be aware if when you're programming your schedule that, you know, Foxtrot comes out on the 21st of June, Disobedience and Upgrade come out on the 14th. So, you know, if you'd rather see something that is not going to be catching in the cinema screens anytime soon, just keep that in mind.
Yeah, this is the second festival where I will miss Foxtrot. I think I was in Israel when I think one of the first screenings actually happened, and I was around the corner, but I couldn't actually go. I will see it in cinemas. But what I will be seeing tomorrow night is every year there is a quality South African film at the festival. 2 years ago it was Necktie Youth, and the year before it was Cuckold. This year it is Number 37. It is a reworking of Rear Window. We've seen a lot of reworkings of Rear Window, but this is one set in a Cape Town township, and I'm quite curious about it. And they've usually picked great ones from the country, so hopefully this is just another.
Is that in the 6 p.m. time slot?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, 6 p.m., yes.
Going up against Terra Nullius.
Oh, no.
A video art that you can see for free in Melbourne. So if you're going up that way, just go to Acme, because it's playing on a loop.
But what I'm seeing is not Terra Nullius. I'm seeing The Venerable W, which is a fantastic documentary about the Rohingya crisis, actually. And it's a very harrowing watch. But I am going to brave it, because it's really good exploration of evil. And, you know, getting heavy quite early on in the fest.
There's a lot of heavy films. We seem to pick out the...
It's a Sydney Film Festival, you know. You've got to... it's all about just punishing your brain. And on that subject, Season of the Devil on Friday
great
night.
Great segue. Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah. Season of the Devil on Friday night. Love DS is back with another black and white 4 hours. But this time, it's an a cappella rock opera.
As you do.
A cappella harmony.
As the description in the festival guide says, it's based on real events and characters and set in the darkest period of the Marcos dictatorship. So if you're looking for 4 hours of suffering in song, Love Diaz is ready to give it to you.
I'm sorry. I love Love Diaz, and I love the woman who left. I was the only person who did not leave that cinema, even though every woman left. So who knows?
The man who stayed.
Hey, I'll have you. Okay, we weren't in your session, but I'll have you know that I stayed.
Oh, there we go.
The man who stayed.
As did the lovely Chanel, who's here with us in the studio tonight.
So that is the beloved.
She's the woman who stayed.
So no one. So it doesn't seem like anyone's seeing Terranellis. No one's seeing. Don't worry, he won't get far on foot. There's two
on Friday night. I'm seeing that on Friday night.
I am too.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, Friday night, 8:30.
I'm considering catching. Don't worry, he won't get far on foot. I think it's playing again.
Next Tuesday.
Yeah.
But that's with the shoplifter, so I'm not going to toggle with that because that's a late edition. So I'm going.
No, I'm catching shoplifters too. I think there's another time that is playing, but
we will find it. We promise it is here. It's a But moving on to the long weekend.
It's coming out. Just to be clear. Oh yes, it is on the long weekend. Right. It's on Monday at 6 p.m. I'll catch that if I can slot it in. But
I'm seeing Tyrell at the time.
I'm seeing Tyrell too. This is the new film from Sebastian Silva, who made the wonderful film The Cactus.
Magic Cactus? Magic.
Crystal Fairy and the Magical Cactus.
Yes, and also Great Magic title. Magic and Nasty Baby. He's actually a really interesting voice, I think.
Magical person.
He's a magical cactus person.
And this is a new Michael Cera film with a number of men and
Michael
one.
Cera!
He was in Magic as well. Yeah. Same director.
And Captain Crystal Fairy and the Magical Cactus.
Right.
Yeah, this is getting very confusing. And it is about a group of friends, one among them an African-American, who joins them, and apparently...
He realizes he's the only black guy at the frat party.
And it gets...
Sold to me was that this was this year's Get Out. And if it's anything like that, I'm on board. Ooh,
but with more alcohol.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. Either on the viewing end or receiving end, it's fine.
So that's Monday night, but we want to cover Saturday, which is where we're up to next. I will be seeing, starting in the afternoon, with one of the Irish films that is playing at the festival, A Mother Brings Her Son to Be Shot. This is, friends from the Irish Film Festival are going to. This is about a self-policing community in Derry. It's a documentary. I always enjoyed the documentary, so this should be interesting. But I think other people are catching other things.
Yeah, well, look, at the same time as A Mother Brings Her Son to Be Shot, there's a film that me and Verrat have already seen at Melbourne International Film Festival last year, 24 Frames. It is sold out, and it is also sold out in its following session next Thursday. But just a hot tip from us seasoned veterans of the festival. if you keep your eye out on sold-out sessions, people often swap out of them.
So 24 Frames is by Abbas Kiarostami.
It's his posthumously released final film.
And actually, if you're going to watch Panahi's Three Faces is pretty much a homage to Kiarostami, so it's going to be a good double.
Very good double. 24 Frames is a beautiful film. It's animated still photos that Kiarostami took throughout his career. And he's now gone back to those photos and decided to try and imagine what happened before and after the moment he took those shots. And so it's basically overlaid animation to try and bring to life images, mostly studies in nature. It's a movie for the patient. A lot of it is about watching animals and wondering what they're thinking and looking at strange little rituals going on. It's very meditative, but I found it very beautiful and... quite an optimistic sort of film about life and the human condition.
And following that, I will be seeing The Breadwinner, which is screening at their new venue, Hoyts, in Fox Studios. Just picking up on a point Chris said a moment ago, it's true. A lot of the films I thought I'd miss out on in previous years, I literally went on the app, saw that little dot that changed from red to orange, grabbed the last ticket. People swap out all the time for sessions. So you think
I just did that for two films in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, so. Do it.
I'm my first Saturday is very interesting because I'm seeing four films and they're all pretty long. So I'm starting with 10 a.m., An Elephant Sitting Still, which is a four-hour unfinished work.
Oh, dear.
completed by the collaborators of the director, I believe.
Yeah, because
he committed suicide.
Tragically committed suicide.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of interesting things. I think it's a Chinese sort of social realist film following a lot of people in poverty and crime, I believe. It sounds pretty...
I don't know about the elephant, but I would be sitting still for the 4 hours.
You'll feel... like an elephant from the weight of this four-hour burden.
And right after, I'm running off to the art gallery to catch Ariel, the Aki Kaurismäki.
Ah, so am I.
And the art gallery in New South Wales. So I freed up that session thanks to the wonderful, wonderful recommendation of Mr. Ian Barr, who's always given me great recommendations.
Did he say to go to see Ariel? Or he said to see an elephant going sitting still?
No, for Ariel. So.
Oh, great. And, well, I'll be catching Ariel as well. I heard good things. But on the subject of clashes...
And then we're going to Man Who Killed Don Quixote
together. We are. We're all going to that. Afternoon.
And then following that, I will be at Piercing, the new Mia Wasikowska
so
film.
Oh,
very good. Running from the Magic Grits to the State Theatre. This is going to be marvelous. This is
event cinemas.
On the subject of clashes, though... between, for some reason, all the long films seem to have been paired together in the program. So from 10 a.m. on Saturday, you could choose between what we just covered, An Elephant Sitting Still, or the breakout hit of the fest, An Ex Libris, the New York Public Library, all 3 hours and 20 minutes of it.
Honestly,
I don't know how this is done so well. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, just so you know, a new session of that film has been added since both sessions sold out. We believe it's Saturday night.
Saturday afternoon around 4 o'clock or something.
But we're seeing Black Klansman then, so
yeah,
Black Klansman,
not possible,
not happening.
But it's amazing.
Just a Bulldogs match.
How is a Frederick Wiseman film the first film to sell out? It's
people
never happened.
People like libraries.
I know, but
film festival crowds love libraries.
It's a beautiful library. Have been there.
Do they understand it's a Frederick Wiseman film? Do they understand what that means?
Do they
means?
Understand how long it is? I think people just be like, I like libraries.
but libraries still exist,
Beatrice,
but there is a thing.
Let's go and see.
Are these the same?
I went to a library a little while ago.
But are these the same people who came to Song thinking it's a Ryan Gosling film and not realizing it's a Terrence Malick film?
That'll be good.
I got a 51 walkouts of this. I would go to Ex Libris just to count the walkouts. I don't think there will be. I think it's people going to know what they're in for.
Just hold out for a ticket. Somebody will walk out in 5 minutes and you're going to have their ticket and go in.
No, I'm sure it'll be very tough. I have been to the library. There's a fascinating building, some fascinating history, and some tragic history. So I'd be very curious
to see how they cover that.
4 hours, by the way.
So people,
4 hours.
Oh, 3 hours, 20 minutes for Ex Libris. Okay. 4 hours for An Elephant Sitting Still. And if you're interested in long movies, you can also catch Mektub My Love, Canto Uno, the new film from the 3 hour loving director of Blue is the Warmest Color. From what I've heard, it's pretty much just a Mediterranean sex romp.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer and it looks like a Mediterranean sex romp.
Part one, by the way.
Oh, dear.
Uno Canto, part one.
How do people not finish these like 3-4 hour movies and just have them just extended on going? There was like a 5 hour one last year, which had to be seen in one sitting. How? And it won the prize.
Was this the Arabian Nights?
Yes.
They split that actually over three sessions. It wasn't one sitting. No, I caught that. And
okay,
you know what? That really did not deserve the prize.
My favorite 5 hour film from last year or the year before was Happy Hour, Hagamuchi.
Right.
Which was my favorite 5 hour film, and it's great. I just got the Blu ray.
Oh, nice.
Delivered.
Nice.
So, so moving
from Amazon,
on
Japan.
To Sunday, I'm seeing, kicking off the day with Three Identical Strangers, the documentary about three young men who were separated at birth and reunited who are completely identical.
Look, it might be good, is all that I'm saying. I might actually have seen it and think it's good.
Interesting.
Yeah,
but we'll discuss that when we're allowed to on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
Because we will be discussing this in some detail on Sunday and our session from 12 to 1 p.m.
I just don't want you to get your heart broken, Glenn, because I think it might be.
There's going to be a lot of heartbreak throughout this festival, except that's why I'm seeing hearts beat loud at the end, because my heart will beat loud. Heart will go on.
Even after being broken, we'll still beat loud.
Seeing her in August. But next, I will be seeing The Miseducation of Cameron Post, the film about a young teen who is sent to a gay conversion camp. This is one of the ones that sold out, or is selling out pretty quickly.
I know, but it just looks all right, which is kind of like...
It's out in August, right? Like, I usually try to avoid, unless I've got time to see it, I avoid the movies that are coming out soon, because I like to
Still Sunday?
This is still Sunday. We're talking about Sunday. We're up to Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm catching the Sakamoto Koda, the
Ryuichi
portrait
Sakamoto,
of the Oscar winner composer.
He's honestly much more significant composer than a lot of people are aware.
I do agree.
Super influential.
And then Touch Me Not, which is the
Golden Bear winner,
and very divisive, apparently.
And a film I feel like is probably going to be easy to get into.
What? Why?
Ooh. I feel like people aren't buying tickets to this one.
Yeah, why? Right. Yeah,
it was
because
weird to me because I was like,
a lot of
Berlinale
winners actually, even Mug, which I'm seeing, is also not selling out. Maybe people just not in the Berlin crowd.
Yes, we're seeing Mug on. I might be seeing Mug on Friday.
Right. It's so hard to predict what people are going to go for at this.
And Mug is really, really interesting from what I've heard. It's really funny. And if you like absurdist
Transit.
Cinema,
Transit.
Two Polish films. Yes, I will be seeing Transit. That is from the same
Christian
director
Petzold.
As
he did Phoenix and Phoenix. Barbara, which are both really fantastic
Phoenix
films.
Just Vertigo, but set in the
I'm
Second
waiting
World
for
War.
Myth
was good.
To see Transit. To have, that's why there's Myth. You know? So if you miss out on something, you can come to Melbourne.
Not for everything.
Not everyone has the ability to take out 3 weeks of their life to cover all of Myth like Virat does.
What are you doing with your life? I mean, honestly.
So, Victoria, they play AFL there. I don't understand it. And Origin tonight, But also
that's a weird segue.
Well, it's true, but it's the first game.
And the origin of Sydney Film Festival, because it's the first night.
Yes, that's exactly what I meant.
That's what you were talking
exactly
about.
What I meant. Yeah.
The stage of Sydney Film Festival.
We like sport too, and we on Sunday night too. We'll be seeing Searching, the new film with John Cho, and it is all taking place in front of a computer screen. We're seeing more of these films social media focused. Oh, there's Chris.
I feel like it's a gimmick. It's been done already. Look, I wish I could name it, but there was a great short film I watched, which was all set on a computer screen.
Wasn't that one with Sasha Grain there?
All the teens were getting killed. It was a
There was that, but there was a short film before that, which was just sort of about porn damaging a relationship, and it was short and sweet in like 15 minutes, all taking place on a computer screen. It was fantastic, but that was like six or seven years ago.
Shot on an iPhone?
It was shot on an iPhone, but it was shot around an LA suburb, which is very
good. It's not the same thing.
So, I think that was a gimmick.
I'm still searching for a good film around computer screens.
Hopefully it will be this one on Sunday night. We would love to talk in such more detail about a Sydney Film Festival clash, as we will in future episodes. We have other days. This takes us to our next episode.
Yes, we'll keep talking about this on Sunday, and we'll start giving you our word on the many, films we've seen. Just way too many movies already.
Way too many movies. And it's already the first day of the festival. But first, before we get into the next films, we will be talking about Solo, the film, the new Star Wars story in cinemas now. It is starring Alden Ehrenreich in the Harrison Ford role as Han Solo, Emilia Clarke, Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson seems to be in everything, and L3, a robot. Now, this is the second Star Wars story. It's the 10th Star Wars film.
The debut film appearance of L3, and when can I see L3 in films again?
We'll be talking about that in spoilers.
It's Phoebe Cates-Waller or something, right? Who is that the name of the
actress? I think so.
Yeah. A British comedian.
Also, Donald Glover, probably the best part of the movie.
And I would actually agree with that. Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian. This takes us back to the early days of Han Solo and his life scrounging with his best friend, played by Emilia Clarke. And it is the origin story in every respect. It is about the Kessel Run. It is about the blaster. It is about the Millennium Falcon. It is about meeting Chewie.
So
and
it's
it
about
fills in all the blanks, most of which do not need filling.
So it's about condensing all the things we've been told about Han Solo into his one movie where all of those things happen. You know, like the little bits of backstory, like he completed the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs. Let's get to see that in a movie. And he won the Millennium Falcon in a card game.
Yeah,
is that in the movie? Yes, of course, it's in the movie. I haven't seen this movie. I'm biased against it. I'll hand this over to Glenn and Verrat.
All the throwaway lines essentially become extended sequences in this movie. It is...
How boring is that?
Well, hold on. It is to a great degree... here's how I look at this film. This film is 66% fan service and frustrating fan service at that. 33% intergalactic fun and 1% unexpected brilliance. And that is the spoiler which we'll be discussing
later.
I
want to see this on the poster. 33% intergalactic fun, .. 1% brilliance. Glenn Falkenstein, Film Fight Club.
Please do. Please put me on the Star Wars poster.
The only thing I would agree with is that this film is only 1% brilliance because it's 99% absolute boredom.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you were not a fan. I was surprised. I mean, the bits that weren't entirely derivative of the other films or that we had not seen before, the two high sequences were very good. The one involving the crazy robots a la Wall-E all going AWOL was a great deal of fun. Ehrenreich, I feel he didn't impersonate Harrison Ford. He gave it a bit of his own. Donald Glover, interestingly, I think, did impersonate Billy Dee Williams, but he was so charming and effervescent. I enjoyed his performance all the more.
Well, Ehrenreich, let's begin with him and whatever he's trying to do. Because
it's Ehrenreich, right?
What?
Ehrenreich?
I think Chris might be right.
You know.
Ehrenreich.
Ehrenreich. Chris is
Ehrenreich.
Right. There we go. That rhymes. You know, the E-guy. Okay, let's go with what he's trying to do. Okay, you know, he's put in an impossible position. He's supposed to impersonate Harrison Ford because, you know, Harrison Ford is Han Solo, so he can't just do his own thing. And yet, he's supposed to not impersonate Harrison Ford at the same time. I mean, have I seen someone put in that uncomfortable position ever before? Yes, and it's terrible, terrible to watch.
So we will be talking in a great deal more about Han Solo on our podcast. So please look it up on iTunes and podcasts everywhere. And we'll also be talking a bit about spoilers, that one particular spoiler in the podcast. We'll be back on next Wednesday night, but also on Sunday at 12 p.m. to talk in some great more detail about the Sydney Film Festival clashes, all the films we have seen and all the films you should see.
With Film in Revolt joining us.
Yes, Film in Revolt will be joining us.
Another podcast.
Look them up on Instagram. They are fantastic. And online, they are a great team of reviewers focused on film. There's Glenn Fallings and Chris Evans, Fright in the Roo. Look at the podcast. We'll be back on Sunday. Have a good night. Enjoy movies. Good night.
Sydney Film Festival!
I love that music. Say what you want about The Phantom Menace, but it has the best score and the best fight sequence of the entire saga. I can rewatch that sequence. I remember watching it in 1999. I could rewatch it endlessly.
I reckon that the fight at the end of Empire Strikes Back still has more weight to it. Like, that's really nicely staged. It might not be as amazingly choreographed as what you have in.
I'll give this one to Glenn because I feel like we have a lot to disagree about in the coming few minutes.
All right, so you're going to give a sympathy referee.
No, I would say he's earned it. You know, he's like, this is a yellow card.
Like the can Solo.
Yeah, wow. Or yellow card like the World Cup. That's what we haven't talked about. Oh, there's a lot of clashes in the World Cup next week too. The Black Klansman comes. We'll finish Black Klansman at the beginning of the Australia French game. So that is, yeah, wow. What a
and then I'll be watching Wild Pear Tree. Like normal person.
But it's also the...
No. Normal people watch 3-hour Nuri Bilgic Ceylan films.
Oh, totally. I mean, if you're not watching a Nuri Bilgic Ceylan film, I don't know who you are.
So normal people will be watching the Australia-Ireland match, which is the second of the three, followed by the South Africa-England match later that morning.
We got lost in the virtual reality at the Hub, and now we live in a virtual reality where people are obsessed with long literary art films.
I love that Saturday. That's one of my favorite Saturdays that's coming, because I'm seeing 5 films all back-to-back at the State Theatre.
Yeah, I'm seeing
starting
a stupid amount of movies.
Leave No Trace, then I'm watching The Heiresses, then I'm watching Manto, then I'm watching Black Klansman, and then finally Wild Pied Trees.
I've done 4 at the State Theatre. I couldn't do 5.
I've done, I think 4 is the maximum I'm doing on any day at this fest. But
we don't want to overdo it.
But yeah, the thing is,
stretch to the limit.
As I'm sure we'll talk about in future episodes during this festival, one of the biggest problems is that a movie that might normally be like the highlight of your day, you just forget about instantly because the quality has to be really good to stick in your mind when you're just watching film after film after film. In many ways, it's not the ideal way to watch these films, but like, we love the festive atmosphere and we love the opportunity to see these films in the cinema. So what can you do?
Film after film after film.
Bring on the madness.
Bring on the madness. We'll be bringing on the madness in the coming weeks, but as promised, we are talking about Solo. So we will be talking spoilers in a few minutes. We will warn you. Spoiler. We will warn you.
Does he get frozen in carbonite at the end?
No.
Or did he get caught up in a lead fridge?
I feel like that would be good. Like, imagine if it ended with he runs into a lead fridge and then it accidentally turns out to be a carbonite freezer.
Virat, I'm going to give it to you. That is the best call I've ever heard.
It gets shot out into space.
Thank you.
The levels of which that works. That's just marvelous. Oh my god, I can't even argue anymore. I'm done. I'm out.
I feel like they should make a franchise of Solo movies that always ends with him getting frozen in carbonite, and then the next one is like, will he get thawed?
It's gonna be like Last Jedi, where Finn just wakes up and is like, what's gonna happen to him? He just woke up. We can't figure out what to do. We're just gonna wake him up. It's gonna be like that. It's gonna be granted there was no real plan at the beginning of Return of the Jedi, but there's gonna be no one to come in and rescue him, and it's just gonna be silly.
To come in and rescue
Alden
David Ehrlich.
Oh, the second reference to David Ehrlich on this program.
When was the first one?
There was some review from maybe Khan last year or something.
Okay, so for anyone who doesn't know, he's a Twitter celebrity / sometimes film critic, mostly Twitter celebrity.
He's the senior critic in IndieWire.
Yes, but he's mostly a Twitter celebrity.
I think that's fair. So we are talking...
Is that a thing, Twitter celebrities? Are they real?
In film Twitter, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Totally a thing. Yeah, film.
I might be one after like Sydney Film Festival gets over because I get to introduce a film this year.
Yes. Oh, we didn't get to talk about that. Yes.
Virat Nehru. We have to talk about this on the Sunday episode, right?
Yes.
So
we
that
do.
The people who don't listen to this podcast will know.
Yes, we will. But very briefly, Virat, then we'll get into Solo.
Oh yeah, sure.
Virat will be introducing
Michelle. Chris will introduce Virat introducing Michelle.
Yeah. Well, there was a Virat just said yeah sure, and then
I didn't realize I was supposed to do my own spiel. It's so weird.
That's fine. We will see. He'll be doing introducing
Alden Ehrenspiel
and doing two Q&As. Well done, Virat. It's going to be very exciting. We'll be at the second one on the Sunday. So no fighting over the session because I know where I am.
I haven't even paid you for this. This is amazing. I love you.
Stop telling you love it. This is Film Fight Club.
No,
Film
no,
Fight
no. Club. Say it again.
What?
The thing you said to Glenn?
Oh, I haven't even paid you yet.
No, then in the next bit?
I love you.
I know. Which
I'm out.
Segues us to
Solo. So this film is not doing so well at the box office, and I am a little surprised. Serious face. I'm a little surprised because there is a lot this film has going for it. There is a lot that is entire derivative. There are a lot of times that they just wink at the camera, and you know it's the Kessel Run. You know that it's the reference to Han shot first
does
or something
he,
else.
Does he meet Chewbacca in this movie?
He meets Chewbacca. I didn't actually mind that scene. That was one
is
of the better
Wookie?
Sequences. Chewbacca is a Wookiee.
Ehrenreich is a Wookiee.
We know how old Chewbacca is now too, which is interesting. And Chewie's still the heart and soul of Star Wars. And I've got to say, the one non-derivative reference, the scene in A New Hope where Han goes, "Don't get cocky, kid." There is a sly reference to it in this. It is the one reference that is not overblown and overdone and shoved in your face, which I appreciated. But all the others, there's no line in this film, with the exception of one line from Donald Glover, which has the organic chemistry of the original Star Wars. It feels like you could launch something off it. It's the scene where Lando's saying, "Go left, leftish." And that was hilarious and natural. And everything else is sort of a hark back to the original. And that really frustrated me.
It's very mechanical. And maybe a lot of people like it because it's, like you said, 66% fan service, which is a very specific number, even though I feel it's, you know, 150% fan service and not really actually a film. You know, there's parts of it which just feel very hard. If trying to be an organic film, it's very difficult to actually put it together.
So if it's not a film, what is it?
Oh, God, it's all a dream.
It's
a commercial? Or
No, because that would be a Terrence Malick thing and it would be too beyond a lot of people's expectations.
But what it is, and that's the annoying thing, it's a prequel. It's a fait accompli. We learn nothing new about Han Solo. We simply get to the point where we can essentially move into the story, the main story, that is A New Hope.
Most importantly, what is Emilia Clarke doing in this movie?
Okay, Emilia Clarke is
Or like in any movie.
All right, she is my biggest and pretty much only bugbear about Game of Thrones. Tamsin Merchant, who was supposed originally cast as Daenerys Targaryen, would have been ideal in the role. Emilia Clarke is not a great actor. She has some range. She is interesting in some films. She does not have the gravitas to carry off Daenerys, and she does not have the gravitas to carry off what is the character in this film, which probably has the most defined and largest arc.
She was pretty embarrassingly boring in the last Terminator movie. And I mean, yeah, it was a bad movie, but
I mean,
she
was even boring
bad.
In Me Before You, which also had like the best kind of sappiness to go for her. Like, you know, you have a person who's going to die for you, and he still made it incredibly boring. How amazing is that?
But you know who was good in this film, and he's in the two biggest films this month? Paul Bettany as the villain. He was interesting. He was engaging. He was intriguing.
But is he the villain?
Is he? I don't know. Well, this is what we get to. Are we ready to talk about the spoiler? Are we ready to get into that?
I want to hear more of why Virat hated this movie.
Actually, fair, before you get to spoilers.
Okay.
Well, I hated it because Han Solo dies at the end.
No.
Yeah, okay.
There are a few reasons. Firstly, around, like, what is the point of this movie? Like, honestly, what is the point? It doesn't tell you anything new, as Chris alluded to already. But also, it's purely a product. It's a cash cow product in the worst way possible. It's not even pretending to be anything else. I mean, at least try to fool me. You know, at least make that much effort. You know, and it's not even trying that.
Marvel are getting pretty good at trying to fool us that we're not just watching
exactly. I'm
brand
so angry
extensions,
at Marvel,
right? Like
At least they try to put wool over my eyes. You know, I'm doing some kind of thing,
some kind of
mumbo
story
jumbo,
movie with
timey wimey
with
stuff.
Stakes
and oh, Doctor Who Star Wars crossover? No, we're not going there. For us.
But also, like, you know, as a Star Wars nerd, it's solely derivative in the sense of not everything is mechanical. All the characters are,
just sort of like mumblecoring their lines. It's phoning it in, or as Lando would say, they're just charming it in. And, you know, Alden, whatever.
Alden Urchin. Let's call him Alden Urchin, right? It's probably the correct pronunciation.
Yes, that's correct. He's put in an impossible position of trying to embody much of Han Solo, who's inevitably linked with Harrison Ford.
Yeah, look.
And yet be his own person. It's an impossible situation to be in.
Anecdotal evidence about why is this movie bombing. I heard people talking at a party a few days ago, and they were saying, you know, like, why did they try and make a Han Solo movie without Harrison Ford?
Yeah, make Knights of the Old Republic, make anything else Star Wars.
To the general public, as Virat was alluding to, Han Solo is not a character people love because he's Han Solo, but because he embodies the swagger of 1977 to 1983 Harrison Ford. That the charisma of him in the specific
timeline.
Yeah, well,
it's fair.
The era when he was playing Indiana Jones as well. People just
He had a great butt at that time. Like honestly, like beautiful derriere.
People like the beautiful derriere and rugged, rough and tumble
and Deckard and all the stuff he was coming.
Yeah, exactly. People love those kinds of characters.
He was the biggest movie star in the world then,
and he had so much charisma. It's before he became permanently grumpy and only recently recovered.
He hasn't made a good film in. I didn't mind The Force Awakens.
Yeah,
he hasn't made a good film in quite a long time. I'd say
shots fired against Blade Runner.
Blade Runner. Okay, fair, Blade Runner. But I'm actually glad he didn't have a cameo in this. He didn't revisit his old role. I don't think that's a spoiler. And I appreciate that because same way in Ed Sheeran, later season of Game of Thrones, it would have taken you out, even more so, out of what is already a very ironic film.
Harrison Ford was in the movie. That would have been really...
Continuing on with my annoying... with this entire
he says,
concept.
Good luck, kid. You're going to need it. To Alden Ehrenreich, and the audience is just confused.
Yeah. Honestly,
then he gets frozen in carbonite.
It's
nothing that everything has to end with being frozen in carbonite, yes. Chris.
Like, but that's what Star Wars is all about.
What's this entire middle of this thing with more
carbonite
coming
plush toys.
In and this supposed political commentary of, you know, these rebel groups and stuff like that, and nothing was explored? It's the worst kind of haphazard, shoddy political commentary being shoved into an already extraneous narrative as to why, what is going on, and why is it happening in front of my face?
Okay. What Rutt's getting at is that Han Solo was interesting in the first film for the same reason that Finn was interesting in The Force Awakens, in that they were not Empire, they were not rebels, they were somewhere in between. This tries to deal with that sort of commentary with a number of other characters, but there is a very lax reveal, which once revealed does not make a great deal of sense. It undermines the tension in now, what, one, but two high sequences, which up to that point were the best in the film. And that really frustrated me. I think it is very nominally political. I think if they'd stuck to the action adventure, which was more an emblematic of Empire Strikes Back and even Return of the Jedi, it would be a much better film. And the best scene in this film, far and above, is the one where it's pure craziness and L337, this wonderful character who I so want to see so much more of, and the secondary high sequence, which blew me away. I just wish more of the film had been like that.
Actually, the high sequence was the one that annoyed the hell out of me. Because I'm not going to say the other four-letter word, because I'm going to say hell out of me.
Virat has been frequently admonished by Glenn for his...
extensive vocabulary.
Yeah.
15 things you can't say on radio.
Yeah.
You know, is that it's so, so badly shot. As an action sequence, it's so boring. Like, it's people doing the worst kind of grade one... philosophy 101 wire work. You know, it's like, oh my god, I just realized I'm a stuntman. Oh, let me do this great trick. Oh, you know, please. It's driven by this kind of, oh, you look, I can turn and this thing is coming in my face and I have to evade this, and it's
That's
all
what
giving this sense of adventure without any actual adventure.
She said.
On this action sequence, what I did like about it was that it was frenetic and chaotic and not overly so. I think a similar type sequence, whether it be in an actual war, as was earlier depicted in the film, or in others, you know, often you have individuals running through a place, and if they're the hero in the film, they're totally going to be okay, which makes absolutely no sense. This didn't do that. This shied away from that, and I appreciated that. And in addition to that, I talked about how Chewie's the heart and soul of this film and Star Wars.
Chewie's
the mascot, but there's a sequence in this which I think envelops a little more on Chewie's character. It is the only element of Han and Chewie's character that I felt grew out of this. It was a key moment in the action sequence. It was actually a heartwarming and actually not unpowerful moment. So I did appreciate that sequence for that.
Sandy Newton was in this movie? Or who was the partner of Woody Harrelson's character?
Yes, she was.
What was she doing in this movie again?
Yeah, she's better than this.
Because I was actually questioning, I was like, was she in this movie? Because I thought she was, like, for 2 seconds, and then she died.
Yeah, she was in... Spoilers!
That's a
spoiler. Oh, dear. We should maybe get into the... It was early. We should maybe get into the spoiler territory now.
Can we edit this, before, this part? Or is it just like, you've listened this far, this is your punishment!
we won't be spoiling anymore, but what we will... before we get into the actual spoilers...
Unlike the non-actual spoiler.
I do want to address I do want to comment one quickly on Woody Harrelson, who seems to be in everything nowadays. He was unimaginative in this. He's a fine actor, but he was doing his Woody Harrelson thing, as he does in every film, and in some Rampart and even Three Billboards, fine. In this, it just didn't fit. I think he was as good as he is. I think he was miscast.
It's like True Detective all over again. Like, oh god,
I need to watch that. I need to finish watching that. It was a tough one. But before we... So we are going to be talking about the spoilers in a minute. But before we do, I want to talk about the twist without divulging it from a spoiler-free perspective, people who haven't seen it yet. Oh, I just want to say this is the best part of the film. This is something many Star Wars fans, myself, have been waiting a long time for. It may be confusing. You may be scratching your head. But it is something more intrinsic to the Star Wars universe, I feel, than just about, if not anything else, that has been included in this film.
Carbonite.
And I really appreciated it, except for Carbonite, of course. Yep. And I would like, and it has made me very excited to see where they take the series, at least the stories, from here.
Actually, now I want to understand your perspective, Glenn, and we should get into spoiler mode.
Yep.
Because
in a moment.
No, because I really didn't think it was that big a reveal, but you really do feel spoilers. That. So I want to understand your point of view before I shit all over it.
Okay. I think here come the spoilers. Da-da-da-da.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So we're
already here because I spoiled it already.
Okay. So
we were never really here. Are we going to see that at the festival?
We are. That's Monday night. Are we? What do more clashes after this? A few more.
Maybe.
Don't worry. We won't get too far into it.
Don't worry. We won't get far because it's just ramshackle all over the place episode. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yes, which is very much Han Solo, this rogue, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a Han Solo themed episode. We're Mavericks. Know? That's what we are. Oh my God, they started production on Top Gun too. Maverick.
Yeah, they did.
Don't ruin everything which is already ruined.
So we are getting distracted. We're getting into spoiler territory in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, spoilers.
So first of all, Thandi Newton dies. In case you haven't heard.
That does happen, Virat. Anything else you want to say on that point?
Well, if you can spot where she is in the movie, I don't think you'll miss her because you won't even notice that she exists. And no, she died. Like, who died? What?
I completely forgot she was in this movie, but I want to talk about...
See?
Yeah, seriously, it wasn't that great.
So I guess it's not really a spoiler, is it? If anything, it's an improvement.
No. Oh, dear, wow. But there is one big spoiler, and guys, ready for it? Darth Maul. Darth Maul is in this movie. Oh, wait, you already knew this.
Yeah, I heard the spoilers already.
Okay.
Wait, who is he?
Exactly.
Darth Maul is the best thing, not just about the Phantom Menace, but about the prequel trilogy. I cannot believe they killed him.
Is he the one who wears that Halloween mask?
No, it's tattoos. He, okay, right. Darth Maul is from the same planet as the Rancor in Return of the Jedi. And
from
the
same mind of Boba Fett and other mascot characters who aren't actually that interesting.
I'm with you on Boba Fett. I did not care for the Fett man.
You know that they're trying to...
Why is this a big reveal? I've still not understood this.
Okay.
Explain it to me.
All right.
Educate my minion mind.
So in the Star
minion
Wars...
Minion mind? What?
Expanded universe, and in the cartoons...
Expand
and
my
in the
mind,
books,
whatever.
Yes, I'll expand your mind with the expanded universe. In it, and it's minor stuff here for those who haven't read the books or seen the cartoon series, Darth Maul survives the events of the Phantom Menace, gets robot legs...
He was cut in half and then fell down an endless shaft. Like, he'd fallen so far down that he becomes a dot that you can't see anymore.
I think he
How is he meant to have survived that?
But the power of fans brought him back.
There was a lead fridge hiding in the mouth of Halloween.
It's the same as in the Expanse. Basically, if you look cool, you've got to get out of jail. Yeah, he took the lead fridge and flew out of the exploding spaceship. But yeah,
carbonite.
Yeah, carbonite. There's a... If you look cool, you get a get out of jail card in the Star Wars Expanded Universe.
Plausible.
Because Boba Fett also clearly was implied to have died, but people thought that Boba Fett looked like a badass. He actually... was totally lame, as we've just established.
Yeah,
but
it wasn't that great.
For whatever reason, there's desire for more Boba Fett stories. So people said, "Oh, actually, he escaped from the Rancor."
Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know what happened to Darth Maul.
Wasn't
but
that
maybe
this, this theory that Boba Fett is actually like a Sith Lord and something? And
I haven't heard that. But the thing is, look, Darth Maul is from this Rancor planet, so he's obviously incredibly, incredibly tough. He made it out, started this Crimson Dawn, and begins to hunt down Obi-Wan Kenobi and a bunch of old enemies. Yeah, this is Darth Maul. He is not just the coolest character in The Phantom Menace, but he's the coolest character in the expanded universe. I'm so glad he is still alive in non-film form, and now finally he is back and maybe getting the treatment he deserves after his very callous and very unfair short end in Phantom Menace at the hands of Obi-Wan.
He wasn't a character.
He wasn't a character. He was the best character.
Wait, hang on. Explain this to me. Crimson Dawn is already existing in this movie.
Darth Maul apparently sets them up in the expanded universe.
No, not the expanded, in this solo movie. This solo.
Yes,
movie.
They're an established
solo,
group.
Solo movie.
They're a very established group, and that was the whole thing. Emilia Clarke's character reports to Paul Bettany's character, Paul Bettany, Voss, and Voss
and they all,
to Darth Maul.
They all serve the Sith and Crimson Dawn.
Yes.
Yeah, and Darth Maul established it. And so...
Well, at least he had a significant role in it.
Yeah, and then what do they do later on? They hunt down Obi-Wan Kenobi, or Crimson Dawn does.
I don't know if they hunt down Obi-Wan Kenobi. I certainly don't want to spoil that, but he suddenly becomes obsessed with him, which may very well be the subject of a future film.
Darth Maul becomes obsessed with him.
Well, look,
so.
They're trying to make... if the box office failure of this film hasn't cancelled them, these plans, the plan is that Disney's going to make a Obi-Wan Kenobi solo film, not with Han Solo, as well as a, wait for it, Boba Fett spin-off movie.
But here's what's exciting. Ewan McGregor is now the right age to portray Obi-Wan at this stage
in
the
it's
timeline.
Perfect. And Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan was one of the best things about the prequels. And I think one of the only things about that the Star Wars fans wouldn't mind seeing brought back.
Yeah. And Jimmy Smith's was fine in Rogue One, but this would be much more enticing, much better. So I appreciated this twist.
Why is this a twist?
Bringing Darth Maul back when everyone thought he was dead? That's a twist.
But nobody dies in Star Wars. Everyone can die and come back whenever they want to.
Force ghosts. But no, I think death is a thing in Star Wars.
Qui-Gon dies. We're going to spoil a lot of Star Wars films here.
Yeah,
people just disappear
in
dust.
Han Solo's not. Oh my god, that was sad. Yeah,
it was well executed. It's so predictable, but like well done enough that even though you know it's going to happen, it was definitely well executed.
He was executed.
I actually take a different view on this. I mean, if you look carefully at that clip in The Force Awakens, we never actually see who handled the lightsaber. So they could very well come back for another reveal at a later point. No? Could be a thing?
I doubt it.
I mean, honestly, there's fanboying and then there's
not showing
whatever
the,
you're doing.
I think not showing a the new lightsaber... Hope. I think not showing the lightsaber is just there for the dramatic effect of, you know, they can't kill off Han Solo. Surely he's going to make it through this. Nope.
Mm. Well,
it's a good scene, though.
I mean, Adam Driver drove that thing through.
Harrison Ford's
the theme of tonight, we come back, Adam
chest.
Driver. So I did appreciate that twist.
Drives the show.
He drives the show. And he was the best thing in the last two actual Star Wars saga films. I wish he was in this one. He would have made it a lot better. That is Solo. It is in cinemas now and for the foreseeable future. Maybe check something out at the Sydney Film Festival rather than seeing Solo.
If you've already seen Solo, do tell us how terrible it was so we can appreciate the communal experience of appreciating how terrible it was.
But making a wider point about this, I mean, The Last Jedi was criticized for taking risks and going outside the box. I didn't like The Last Jedi in respect, not in those respects, but in other respects.
But the
thing is, Solo, at least in the very tumultuous production, has been widely viewed, and certainly fairly so following its release, as a film that has playing it very safe and is trying to get that basic box office draw. But now it's showing that people are not actually in favor of that. People want risks. And
Part of me wants to see the Phil Lord and Chris Miller version of this, which would have been a lot of fun.
Ventura in space.
Yeah, I think that was a false rumor, really. I can't imagine that it was actually that extreme.
I can't imagine it either. I mean,
isn't Han Solo's like the spirit? It's supposed to be adventurous and fun and carefree and laid back, which is all Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
What
gets me is Ron Howard is credited as the director of this, but he only came into the end. I mean, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, they're what, like advisors on in the credits?
Look, I think Ron Howard directed 70%+ of the film, which is made this a very expensive production because it meant a delayed start for the special effects.
Yeah, they probably won't recoup that money.
Definitely not going to recoup that money.
But I think ultimately this film shows us that we want risk, and even if it doesn't always pay off, we will take it where we can get it. There was one risk I did not appreciate in The Last Jedi, but I appreciate most of them, and I appreciate most of all that they took.
What was that risk? We're at the spoiler stage. If you're here, you know, we're about to spoil The Last Jedi, which you've probably already seen.
Spoiler.
There were a couple of things. It was the Admiral Hodo character, which I felt was a bit of a the role and the function could have just as well been played by Admiral Akbar, who deserved a more fitting end. And also the sequence, completely tonally inconsistent with his character at the end with Finn when he stormed the Death Blaster or whatever it was with the Death Star tech, when a few minutes ago he actually wanted to run away for the whole thing. It didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Right.
Yeah. So that was Solo. We will be back on Sunday from 12 to 1 p.m. with the Film and Revolt crew. They are a fantastic crew of people, young people in their late teens and early 20s focused on youth-focused film, and they will be talking about some of the films geared towards young people at this festival with them come this Sunday.
And on top of that, we'll have another freewheeling, mad, hot take frenzy about all the films we've seen so far.
Hot takes at them while they're hot.
Yeah, hopefully not as snarky as this one, but we'll attempt to match the snarkiness.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be in festival mode, so all bets are off, but we won't be talking about, you know, a toy commercial, so so, you know, maybe the level of discourse will be pitched towards the intellectual crowd who gathered to see films like
Upgrade.
Ex Libris.
Yeah. Upgrade, but it's all right. We'll still toy with your intellect, so don't worry.
So tune in for 12 to 1 to hear us toy and toy with your intellects. This has been Glenn Falkenstein, Chris Evans, and Virat Nehru. Enjoy
the toy intellects. That could be our band name.
Toy intellects. Oh my God, it's going to be a thing.
Maybe. It's a metal band that I want to not be seeing.
Oh, that's another one we didn't talk about, The Rock Cabal. Anyway, we're going to talk about that next week. Have a wonderful night.
We just can't let go.
We just can't let go. There's so many films. Rock Cabal.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
I don't know. Freeze me in carbonite before it's too late.
Another Doctor Who reference. Can't let go. I don't want to go.
That was timey-wimey earlier. Yeah. Anyway, we've transitioned from Doctor Who into Star Wars and Doctor Who.
I love you, David Tennant.
Star Wars and Doctor Who.
Have a wonderful night. Enjoy movies.
Or day, or whatever time it is when you're listening to this.
We're a podcast, so you can listen to us basically whenever.
Love movies, love life, love yourself.
Love City Film Festival. Good night.
Bye.